sermons on the and it's on the family. Last week, we talked about how to find the love of your life. That is, how to basically find the will of God for your life, not only in marriages, but in other relationships, other things that we need to know and understand about making decisions and knowing God's will. Well, today and next week, I want to put a little, warning on these two next sermons. Today, some of you are going to be discouraged, I promise you. Some of you are going to say, I don't know how this happened. I don't know how I got here. I remember a time when I used to go fishing before the casinos took over down in Tunica. We used to go fishing at Tunica. And we'd go down there and get in the cutoff and go across into the Mississippi River and set out lines and catch fish. Well, we were down there one night, and we heard a tugboat coming. One thing you do not do is get in the Mississippi River with a tugboat. So we heard the horn. We were on the Arkansas side of the river. And so we just pulled up into this little eddy and decided we would wait for the boat to get through and for the waves to stop. Because, boy, they throw a big wake. I mean, it can sink a little old. We were in a 16-foot John boat with a 20-horsepower motor, but that's nothing when you get a wake from a tugboat. Or, those, it's amazing how big those waves can be. Well, we were there. We pulled up in this little eddy, and it was like 4 o'clock in the morning. And we'd been up all night running lines, so I was running the motor. I just kind of kicked back, put my head on the motor, And the buddy that was with me, he did the same down the other end. But we failed to do one simple thing. We did not tie the boat off. And so we both fell sound asleep. And somehow we had drifted out of that eddy, out into the Mississippi River. We had crossed two of these huge breaks that they put out there, those stone breaks that slows the current down. We had gone past two of those, and we had ended up about 5 miles downriver. When I woke up, we're floating in the river, and I'm thinking, my gosh, where are we? What? And had no clue. We had been floating for about an hour. In other words, we had let our guard down, and we did not do a simple thing like taking a rope and tying it to a tree or throwing an anchor or something to secure the boat, and we had drifted and had put our lives in peril for a simple decision that could have saved us from putting our lives in peril. Thank God for His mercy and His protecting angels. Because number one, I wasn't saved at that time. And I would have died and gone to hell in the Mississippi River. And would have been fish bait. But thank God for His mercy that as we drifted, He kept us safe. In fact, they had search teams out for us. Because they knew something had to have happened. And we found our way back. When you're lost like that, especially in the river, the water looks like it's running uphill and downhill. We couldn't tell which way the current was. You were all so excited. We had drifted. And I want to say to you this morning that that's exactly the same thing that can happen in a marriage and in a family and in any relationship. You can let your guard down. You can fail to do simple things that will encourage and strengthen your relationship. And the next thing you know, you're in peril because you have drifted so far. And here's what I've heard so many people say through the years. How did we ever get to this place? I think, you know, there's lots of things that, the reasons we get there. You know, I remember, you know, the greatest wedding in my lifetime that was on TV. You remember Prince Charles and Princess Diana, that great wedding, all the pomp and circumstance, all the coaches, you know, all the horses, all the carriages, the royalty, all the things. What a perfect marriage, right? What a perfect wedding. How did such a perfect thing end up so tragically? What goes wrong in a marriage? What happens to marriages? What happens to other relationships? Well, several things. Number one is unresolved issues. You know, these are things that cause us to doubt and to second guess and feel like we married the wrong person. Hence the title of the sermon today, What Do You Do When You've Married the Wrong Person? End quotes. Well, let me just say that if you are married, it's not the wrong person. That's the one you're married to. These are things that you brought, you know, every one of us brings a suitcase full of baggage into a marriage. It's the baggage that we have in our marriage, every one of us. You bring this baggage that you and your spouse brought into your marriage, and marriages don't create problems, they just reveal problems. Boy, while you're dating, you look over those things. You know, you just can't wait to be together. You spend your whole day thinking about when you're going to be together again, and you look over those little things and that, you know, that kind of irritate you, but you just look over them. And it's kind of like, you know, like the marriage, you know, you walk down the aisle, you come to the altar, and you sing a hymn, and that's the way most ladies look at marriage. Aisle, altar, hymn. Now, ladies, I said that for you, because I know y'all will take a joke. The guys would not take a joke. So I'd have to be fighting after the service if I told a joke on the guys like that. But I know you ladies can stand it. You didn't come into the marriage as a blank slate. You came with baggage. You came with background. You came with history from your own family, from all your own hurts and habits and hang-ups that you've had, the issues of life that you've faced, all of those. And we have many times this grandiose idea that once I get married and my Prince Charming and my Lady Princess comes, then everything will be perfect. And marriage is wonderful. It's the greatest gift I believe God gave to us besides salvation. But it is the most challenging gift He's ever given us too. Because you can't drift in your marriage. If you do, you will end up putting it in peril. The more pain you grew up with, the more baggage that you have, and the more you've got to deal with. Those unresolved issues. In fact, in many ways, your family basically has set you up. They set you up in many ways to succeed by the things that they did to help you to understand how to succeed, but they set you up in other ways to fail. They set you up with some great strengths in your families, but also the weaknesses that are in your family. Do you realize that there's not a person in this world, not a marriage in this world, not an individual in this world that is perfect? And so you bring all of that imperfection of all of your family and all of your background into a new marriage relationship. And a lot of people get into marriage and think the marriage is creating all the problems. Marriage does not create problems. It reveals the problem. And there are issues that need to be dealt with. And if you had decided to live alone for the rest of your life, you probably would never have had to deal with them. But once you marry someone, then you've got to deal with them. The best way to prepare for marriage, if you're unmarried and you want to get married, is to deal with your past. get that settled in your heart before you bring all of that garbage in and dump it in on your new spouse. Get it right with God. Put it under the blood of Christ where it is forgiven so that you can start a whole new life and a whole new way and a whole new plan. But listen, marriage is important. Unmet. The second thing is unmet expectations. Now, I don't know any area of life where we set ourselves up higher for failure than these unmet or these unrealistic expectations that we have. Hollywood. We have swallowed the Hollywood line, hook and sink. We see all these movies where the knight in shining armor, the Prince Charming, comes and sets free the fair maiden, and they ride off into the sunset on a white horse, and they live happily ever after as the credits roll. Folks, that doesn't happen in real life. Can I get an amen? Nobody is going to come to your house on a white horse to rescue you. If you ride off into the sunset, it's probably going to be smog or fog. That idea is fantasy. And even the way we set up the process in our American culture of dating and courtship and engagement and wedding and then the honeymoon, it sets us up many times for a massive disappointment if we're not careful. No area in our lives do we have such high expectations. Now, when you do courting and when you're engaged, you act in ways that you would never act in a normal life. When you're trying to attract someone, now listen to me, you wear your best clothes. You look the best as you can all the time. You're on your best behavior all the time. You spend money foolishly and extravagantly on things you don't have money to spend it on. You're in your 20s and you go out and buy a diamond. What does a 20-year-old need with a diamond? You need a house and a car and some electricity. Most of all, you need a good job. You do things in courting you would never do as a normal person. Like go to the opera. Can you see a redneck Fayette County country boy going to an opera? But he'll do it if his date wants him to. But after he gets married, even the way we set up the wedding sets, you know, the wedding, it sets us up with these incredible expectations. Have you ever read one of these bride's magazines? That's like reading a foreign language to me. I looked at one this week just to remind myself. What they ought to put on the cover as a subtitle instead of Bride's Magazine, they ought to put Science Fiction. Listen, ladies, the women in these magazines, all their blemishes have been airbrushed out. There's no cellulite. There's no ugly people. Everybody is stunning in the Bride's Magazine. I've been as a pastor in some weddings that they took on Disney extravaganza proportions. There's a cast of thousands building up to a 45-minute event. The woman is hibernated. It takes her 3 days to get ready, and they turn her into a goddess. And she comes out walking down the aisle, and everybody knows she's never, ever again going to look like that ever. And And from there, it's all downhill. On top of that, they make all the bridesmaids wear all these ugly, goofy-looking dresses so that the bride will look much better. Have you ever seen a bridesmaid's dress anybody would be caught dead in after the wedding? I know I'm touching in some touchy areas here this morning, but we're doing a little parody here. There's a lot of beautiful bridesmaids, a lot of beautiful bridesmaids' dresses. Don't go out of here mad at me, please. Too late, huh? But what I'm saying is we set ourselves up. We hyped everything up, and then we get married, and life starts to happen, and we say, and I hear it said all the time, what happened? Now, fast forward after this wedding, it's a fantasy world of where everything must be perfect, and the honeymoon is this far-off place that nobody could ever afford to go to, but it's perfect. There's no mosquitoes and no sunburns there. But now, fast forward about 6 months into the marriage. The same couple is sitting around the breakfast table. The guy is in a t-shirt, and he's got at least a day's stubble of beard growth. She's got curlers in. They both got morning mouth. They're arguing over how come they can't meet the budget and who's going to take out the garbage. And all of a sudden, this viral freshly showered young man at the front door with flowers is replaced with a pile of dirty underwear in the corner. And instead of dinner served by candlelight, there is a half gallon of spoiled milk on the kitchen sink that he's been drinking out of the jug. And instead of an evening of being scented with Ralph Lauren and Chanel No. 5, we now have body odor, burps, and other noxious gases. You look at each other and you say, "What happened?" I'll tell you what happened. You set yourself up for unrealistic expectations. The third thing is underestimated differences. Underestimated differences. You know, we've all heard the cliche that opposites attract, but we haven't heard the rest after that you're married, opposites attack. What used to be fascinating is now frustrating. At first, things fantastic. At first, things fascinate us. But after we live with them a while, they irritate us. They frustrate us. When I first fell in love with my precious wife, Jan, I would look at her and I was fascinated that God could create such a wonderful human creature that was so different from me. I'm still in awe of that. But in every way, she was so different than the way that I am, but it was fascinating to me. You know, in early days, we tend to always do this. We underestimate our differences, and we overestimate what we have in common. Now, unexpected expectation. The guy says, "I thought I was marrying Raquel and I got Roseanne." Another guy says, "I know I was marrying Mrs. Wright because I didn't know her first name was Always." But listen, unmet and unrealistic expectations. The fourth is unforgiven mistakes. Ruth Graham was asked one time about did she and Billy Graham, Dr. Billy Graham, ever talk about divorce? Because, you know, he was world famous evangelist, traveled all around the world, crusade after crusade, millions of people came to Christ because of him. And Miss Ruth stayed at home and raised their children. And Billy always credited her with her strength and stamina and her ability as a mom and support. And so they were being interviewed and they asked, did you ever consider divorce? Was that ever discussed in your marriage? And Miss Ruth popped up really quick and said, no, but we thought about murder a few times. And then she followed up, and the follow-up question was, well, what is the secret to a lasting marriage? And this is what she said. You've got to have two people who are great forgivers. Let me tell you something. If you can't forgive in your marriage, you are headed for destruction. Now, what is that forgiveness based on? Is it based on because my spouse deserves being forgiven? Absolutely not. But let me ask you, what was your forgiveness from Jesus Christ based on? Was it because you deserved it? No, it was because you had to have it. It was a necessity. And even though you could have asked for it and asked for it and asked for it, unless Jesus had done what he did in coming to pay the price for our sin and then offering to us forgiveness, we would never, ever have been forgiven. And if our forgiveness is based on the unmerited favor of God, then we need to as well. That's the way the Scripture says that we're to love our spouses and our families. We are to extend that same forgiveness. Now, don't confuse forgiveness with forgetting. You will never forget some of the words that you say to each other in your heated moments. You'll never forget some of the hurts that you've had to face because of something that your spouse said or did. You will never forget that, but you can forgive it, not because that person deserves it, but because of what Jesus had done for you. And if you are not willing to give that forgiveness, then there's something you need to work on. It's not your spouse, it's you. Unforgiven mistakes. You cannot have a marriage unless you learn forgiveness, because if we hold on to our hurts from our spouse, you're going to be hurt. And let me let you in on a secret here today. You will be hurt by your spouse. Sometimes unintentionally. Sometimes intentionally. So don't think that you're going to come into marriage and you'll never have to worry about being hurt again. You're going to be hurt. Here's the issue. It's how you deal with that hurt is the issue. It's how you're able to move into that intimate time there where you get your heart right with God and where you then begin to pray for your spouse. And you guys, listen, if you are both Christians, there is nothing that cannot be worked out under the blood of Christ. If the husband and wife will get down on their face at the altar of God and begin to pour out and begin to ask God to forgive them for their selfishness and forgive them for their own wickedness and their own deceitful hearts, and then join hands and hearts together, there's not a marriage in this world under Christ that can't be saved. But we have got to deal with those issues. We've got to learn to forgive. Why would people hold on to hurts? I'll tell you why. Because we like to use them as ammunition. When we start this, he said, she said, or you never do this, or you always do this, or you did this, then we can say, but you did this. And she goes, well, man, we've got our guns loaded. We're ready. We hold on to them. And all you need to do is just take a breath and pow, we're going to be shooting right back. Have you ever seen a beauty makeover? We used to watch these things. My wife liked to watch the TLC channel and stuff like that. And being an okay husband, I will watch those with her. But here's what they do. They take an average, ordinary person. You know, they used to have these things called glamour shots. They still do those things. They take an average, ordinary person and do what they call a makeover. They cut their hair. They lighten or darken it. They do the makeup just right. The perfect clothes, the right accessories. A stunning beauty comes out. And it's amazing. It's called a makeover. And the key to a good makeover is knowing what to do with what you got. You can't work with something that ain't there. So this morning, I want to give you some ways to have a makeover in your marriage. Quickly. I know I'm almost out of time. A, accept responsibility for your actions. Quit determining how you're going to respond by the way your spouse responds. You respond according to the way God has designed and told you to respond. And you get your heart right and then pray that God will get your spouse's heart right. And then y'all's heart will be right and you'll have that makeover in that marriage. Galatians 6 from the New Century Version says this, each person must be responsible for himself. You can't control your spouse's actions and you cannot control your spouse's attitudes, but you can control yours. That means I have to accept responsibility for my marriage as an individual. As a husband, I have to accept responsibility for what goes on in my marriage. I'm not going to blame my wife. If only she would, or if she didn't, or whatever we may say, no, it's all about me and my expectations and unrealistic expectations and all these other things that I have. I have to deal with me. And listen to me this morning. If you are struggling in your marriage relationship here this morning, you need to deal with you before you will ever, ever, ever see your spouse changed as well. Deal with you. You know how you can have, the best spouse in the world? Do you know how you can do that? I could charge people $500 for this answer right here. Do you know how you can have the best spouse in the world? It's to be the best spouse. Now see, that didn't cost you anything. And after you got it, you didn't want to pay for it anyway. You want to have the best marriage in the world? Then you be sure that you're making it the best marriage in the world. That you're willing to do whatever has to be done. Now, I'm not talking about being a carpet that you're stomped on and walked on and made fun of and abused. That is not even in the realm of authority. I mean, those are issues that need to be dealt with for sure. I'm talking about in a marriage where you were willing to do what it takes to see that that marriage honors God first of all, and that your heart is right with God. And when your heart is right with God and your spouse's heart is right with God and God is honored in the family and your children see that God is honored, you will have a glorious relationship. And the only thing that's stopping you from having that is you. That means you stop having a pity party. Stop comparing your spouse to others. If you're doing that, stop it. It doesn't do any good except make you miserable. Stop complaining about your marriage. You will stop resenting your marriage. You will stop blaming your spouse for your unhappiness. Because, listen to me, you are as happy as you choose to be. It's all about what you choose to be. If you want to pick on your spouse and point out all their faults and frailties and all their past, and you want to pick on your spouse and bring up all the things that are bad about them that you didn't know about and all this stuff, if you want to do that, you're going to be a miserable person and you're going to be a terrible spouse yourself. You cannot fix your marriage if you're always trying to fix the blame. The grass is not greener on the other side of the fence, and the grass is not greener on this side of the fence. The grass is greener where you put water on it. Your marriage needs to be watered, and guess what? You are the waterer, if that's a word. Accept responsibility for your own action. B, believe my marriage can change. My heart breaks as a pastor when I see folks who they're throwing up their hands and they're giving it up. My heart breaks. Because you're not solving any problems. All you're doing are you're creating a whole new set of problems that you're not even thinking about. And it all comes down to how you're looking at your marriage. You may be looking at it and saying, from a human standpoint, it's on its last leg. From a human standpoint, it died 5 years ago. From a human standpoint, it's in the coffin and they're nailing the nails down on the lid. The heart monitor shows the beep getting slower and slower. But if you look at it from God's point of view, nothing is impossible with God. Don't give up. Don't give up. Accept responsibility. See, commit to doing whatever it takes. If it means counseling, I'm not sure why folks are so afraid of counseling. I've counseled with a lot of folks through the years, and they'll come. And I say, well, have you been to any counseling or anything? Yeah, we tried that once. Once? Let me ask you something. If you had a broken leg and would you just lay around the house and say, oh, I went to the doctor once and he didn't do me any good? No, you would get yourself up and you'd run to the hospital and you'd let them do what they needed to do to heal your broken leg, and it is not an overnight fix. Sometimes you have to walk around for weeks on crutches. And then you're limited in what you're able to do because of that brokenness. Well, it's the same thing in a marriage. When marriages are broken, it's worse than a broken leg. It is a broken heart. And it takes time for those hearts to be in their woundedness to be healed. So don't give up. Commit to doing whatever it takes. The best money you will ever spend is to spend it, if you're having a struggle in your marriage, is to spend it on some professional counseling. But be careful there. That it be Christian counseling. It takes effort. Good marriages don't just happen. It takes honesty. It takes humility. It takes a willingness to say I'm wrong. Please forgive me. It takes a willingness to be frank and honest and to look at your family background and say not everything was perfect there. And instead of defending it, see stuff that was totally inappropriate, dysfunctional, and not helpful. It takes a willingness to change, and you have got to be willing to do that. The truth is, it costs to have a great marriage. We will spend $10,000, $15,000, $20,000 for a wedding ceremony, but we won't spend 5 minutes trying to get help to save our marriage. Well, let me tell you, the truth is it costs to have a great marriage. It costs a lot in time, effort, and energy. But let me give you this advice. It costs more to go through a divorce. I'm not talking about just financially. I'm talking about physically, emotionally, and spiritually. Now, can you overcome those things? Absolutely. And you can be the victim of somebody else's choice, and in the world, in the legal system in which we live today, your spouse can just absolutely abandon you and leave you, and there's nothing you can do about it. Except God's on your side if you will just focus on Him. The truth is, it costs to have a great marriage. It's far more worth the cost to save the marriage and to let God transform that marriage into a miracle marriage than it is to just chunk it. Some of you are thinking, well, I don't feel like it. I don't feel like working on it anymore. I don't love him or her anymore. I'm dead inside. I've been hurt too much. I don't feel like it. What do you do when you don't feel like it? When you don't feel like working on your marriage? Two things. You pray and you obey. You pray that God will give you the feelings again. You obey that you're going to do the right thing no matter what it costs. And really, honestly, today, I really don't care if you feel like it or not. And I don't think God cares whether you feel like it or not. Do you think Jesus felt like going up Golgotha's hill? Do you think he felt like being beaten to the very inch of his life? Do you think that it was something that he wanted, that was okay? No, he did it because he knew it was what had to be done for you and me to be forgiven of our sin. And we ought to have the same type of sacrifice, willing to do whatever it takes, whether we feel like it or not, to do it to save our marriage and to save our families. Our families are in trouble. But I want to tell you, God is a miracle-working God. Deal with the unresolved hurts. I've got to quit. Sorry, got to quit. E, enlist support from others. And let God take your marriage and heal it, because only He can do it. Let me give you just a word of advice in closing. Take the mess that you've got. And by the way, God didn't make the mess. Who made the mess? Yeah, we did. Take the mess that you've got, bring it to the altar, give it to God, and God will take that mess. If you're broken and if you're repentant, God will take that mess and He will mend it. And He will create a miracle out of a mess. And He will do a makeover that will last a lot longer than a day at the beauty shop. It will last for eternity. Do you know that our marriages, according to Ephesians chapter 6, are to be a beautiful picture of Jesus Christ and His church, His bride. Guys, let me ask you something today. Are you treating your bride like Jesus treats the church? Are you? Are you willing to sacrifice for your bride? Are you willing to change for your bride? Are you willing to give your life for your bride? Are you willing to lay it all down and put your selfishness aside and all that stuff that you've got in your baggage and just dump it out and pray God's blood over it and forgiveness and do whatever it takes to be the husband you need to be? And wives, let me ask you something today. Are you willing to do the same thing? If you are, then I can promise you a great miracle will take place in your family. And it will take place in your hearts and lives. Take what you've got, give it to God, and He'll do a makeover. Pray with me. I would just ask, if you're sitting next to your spouse right now,